5:15, and it's March 13, 1984. And the committee members here, Special Committee on State Loans, Representative Furness, Representative Copeland, Representative Wente, Representative Ewling, all present. Topic of today's discussion is HB 504. We have a committee substitute, which is in your file. We have two versions. The first version on your right-hand side was drafted on 3-8. The second version is 3-9. A couple of the changes which are addressed in this, and I believe they are marked in green. It makes two minor changes in Hess version, moving the language on page 3. Line 25 pertains to graduation within 6 months to paragraph 4 on page 4, and deleting the word students from the next paragraph. Why don't we go ahead and start with testimony on the committee substitute? We have a list of who's here. Also changed from native to rural.
Did you take out a section because the pages don't, pages and lines don't correspond?
There was an additional amount that was added to it.
So, Mr. Chairman, which one are you holding a hearing on? The 3-9 or 3-8?
Essentially, the bill is before us is 504, and it's up to the, I drafted the two committee substitutes to, for discussion for the committee. See what I'm saying? So in other words, Representative Furness, the two committee substitutes are here before us to look at as loans committee substitutes, however we're here in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Sure.
Mr. Furness, the version that's marked with the blue is almost a complete redraft after the findings, and it changes the words native to rural. The changes that I mentioned, that Representative Ewing mentioned, marked in green, are changes from the Hess version, which is underneath that green version.
Then the question, what prompts then the blue version changes?
The going back to the Hess committee, there was a question using, and it'll be explained, I believe, we have Linda here. Do we not? Linda? Yeah, Linda's here. In regard to an AG's opinion that we got regarding, which is in your packet, dated March 13th, that's committee substitute 504, and it states the equal protection problems with using the word native, and what we've done is we substituted the word native and used rural, and she will be here to testify on those changes, and you should also have a chance to sort of read through the AG's opinion, which is listed in there, too. Keith, Levi, did you want to come forward and we can...
Well, I'm really only here to answer any questions the committee might have. I drafted the two versions.
Okay, very good. Why don't we go ahead and start with Linda then, and she can kind of give you the historical perspective on and why we came up with this committee substitute for discussion purposes today. Want to state your name for the record.
My name is Linda Scotia. I'm an assistant attorney general. And actually, my purpose in coming was to answer any questions that people, any of the members of this committee might have, but I would be happy to give any kind of preface to any discussion.
Okay, you've had a chance to know what the problems were when we originally started with the bill, when I served also on the Hess committee in regard to the equal protection problem. And to substitute the version 2 that we had before us, there were some changes where we changed the word from native to rural. Maybe you could explain a little bit of the reasoning behind that from a legal standpoint from your office.
Okay. I believe that the change from the words native, which were put into the Hess committee substitute, I believe originally the bill spoke about ethnic minorities. I presume that the change from the word native to rural was meant to alleviate the equal protection problems which were identified in the original two drafts of the bill. The equal protection problems are ones that would arise under both the Alaska Constitution as well as the United States Constitution, and basically the problem is that whenever a piece of legislation makes a classification which is based on racial or ethnic criteria, the courts are going to look very closely at that legislation. And usually, in most cases, the courts do not accept legislation that is based on racial or ethnic criteria. And in order for the court to accept such a piece of legislation, they would have to find that the interests that are promoted by the legislation are compelling, that the means that the legislature has chosen to achieve those ends are substantially and significantly connected with those ends, such that basically there is no other way of achieving those ends that would have a less discriminatory impact. It's an extremely hard test to meet, and therefore, generally speaking, if there are other means of achieving the ends that the legislature is trying to achieve that do not employ racial or ethnic criteria, it is a good idea to do that. The standard, if one were to use the classification rural versus urban, that classification urban does not involve a suspect classification. And the significance of that is that in cases where suspect classifications are not involved, which race and ethnicity both are suspect classifications, the way the court looks at the legislation is, it's a very relaxed scrutiny, relatively speaking. The Alaska Supreme Court still scrutinizes legislation more carefully than the United States Supreme Court, but you know, you just have a much better chance of the law withstanding the court scrutiny.
Very good. Representative Furness, do you have any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I've had a chance to review the two, and I believe the 3984 is a proper document. There are some differences, and in some cases are substantial, but they're tangent to the overall intent of the bill. I would assume that the sponsor, Jason Hayes, has no objection to the 3984 version?
That's correct. Is that?
That is correct.
Yeah, we went over it this morning. One thing, while we're all here, the change that was from the original House Committee substitute, if you go to page 3 on your left-hand side in version 2, it says to be eligible for a teacher scholarship loan, a student must be a graduate of a public or private high school in the state, and before it said be a graduate of or scheduled for graduation within 6 months. The 6 months criteria was taken out because we were getting a lot of people who were very, very confused on it. So what we've done is we've cleaned that up and stated that to be eligible for a loan, a teacher scholarship loan, you must be a graduate. So we took out the 6 months provision. We clarified it, moved it into number 4, if you continue to page 4, number 4, and it says an application may be submitted 6 months before graduation from high school. Because there was a question regarding the 6 months criteria, people were getting confused on if they had to put in their application 6 months ahead or something, but it was further clarified, I think, there. Is that your understanding?
Yes, it's correct. The effect is precisely the same as loss.
Correct. And then the other change, as you mentioned, was the changing of the term native to rural. And I guess my intent there was just to make it clearer in the committee substitute.
Do you want to motion, Mr. Chairman? Substitute.
We have questions, and then we have one. I think Kerry wanted to testify briefly, and then we'll move. Representative Wendy. My colleague in the Southeast.
Among the legal issues is the original version has limited the availability of total forgiveness to teachers who teach in the district from which they are graduated. Does that same problem apply to designating the forgiveness only to rural areas as opposed to they come back and teach in urban areas? Why? Does that limit where a person can go to work? It seemed to me the same legal concern would apply under this language as opposed to original language.
Well, Representative Venti, I think that the way this bill is drafted, where the intent is to address problems that exist in rural schools, that the issue is somewhat different than it is in the original bill, where the intent was still to address problems that existed in rural schools, but it seemed that it was overly restrictive to require a student to return to the precisely same school district that that teacher graduated from. In the original version, if they were to go teach in another school district, even if it were rural, they would not be eligible for that forgiveness. And under this version, it doesn't matter which school district they teach in, as long as it is a rural school district, which is, after all, what the bill is intended to focus on.
So on the legal issues, your testimony is that that limit of where they can go back and get a job in order to qualify for the forgiveness is not going to be a concern.
I don't believe that it raises a significant equal protection problem.
Very good. Any other further questions? Thank you. Carrie Romsberg.
I'm Carrie Romsberg, Director of the Commission on Post-Secondary Education. I'm here generally just to see if you have questions about how we would interpret this or how we would intend to administer the program. Most of us have already discussed it in another committee, and I would just point out that the program as it outlined here would be subject to the same statutes and regulations that the current student loan program is within the changes necessary as to allow the desired effects of this particular bill. So we're really talking about the student loan program as it exists and then some add-ons which this bill provides.
Representative Copeland.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, what is the fiscal impact? Do we have to fund this separately, or would this be impacting on the general scholarship loan program?
The impact is pretty nominal. There is a fiscal note attached with it, and I have it over here, I think it's $62,000 or so, but the reason it's so low is because it does impact the current program. A person can't borrow under both. So if an individual borrows under this program, they wouldn't be coming from the funds wouldn't be coming from the scholarship loan program. So it's just an offset there. So it's essentially a wash unless the individual qualifies for more than they could qualify under the current program, and that's very few students. In other words, and I made this point before, we should all remember this bill says you can borrow up to $10,000. Few students are going to get $10,000. Very few.
Well, Frank, I guess one of the problems I have with the bill, why the $10,000 would be separate from the existing program we have. I guess the main advantage of this bill is the forgiveness.
That's correct.
And why, I don't know why we would have the $10,000 in there, which is not consistent with what other students can get, and I think the effect would be, or let me ask you how you would attempt to apply this effect. Anyone going to get a teaching degree is basically going to have a pretty broad liberal arts type schedule for the first couple of years. Almost anybody could come in and say they're going to be a teacher, get the $10,000 loan, regardless of what they intend to actually end up with. And I think with having that $10,000 loan in there, which is higher than our existing program, you're gonna add an incentive for people to pursue this program. How are you going to deal with that situation? I mean, all it says is it looks like they're going to pursue a teaching career. That's pretty easy to do for the first couple of years of college.
If I may, I think Representative Winnie is exactly correct. If an individual is smart enough to figure this program out, and if they're from a rural school, and if they want to go to a private institution that costs a substantial amount of money, they will indicate they're going to be a teacher, and then they can get $10,000, because those are the only ones going to qualify. Understand, if they're going to go to Fairbanks, they can still only borrow $3,500 from us, $3,550, if they live in the dorm. That's all they can get. Even if it says 10, you can only borrow for the three eligible items anyway. So if you've got an individual that's really sharp, and assume these people would be the top of the class, and they want to go to a private school, Stanford or Willamette or one of those, where you can't borrow more than $6,000 under the regular program, declare yourself or you intend to be a school teacher, and you get 10, it's still 5% money, you still get 50% forgiveness, you won't get the 100 unless you teach. I think some people will figure that out. So.
Well, now, another question along those lines, what if someone switched their major, if they were essentially declared immediately, and under this provision of the bill, I guess you could declare as a freshman, and go as a freshman and a sophomore, and then inevitably change majors, and let's say you went into history or something, mm-hmm. or something else.
Well, you'd be dealing with intent, and we've dealt with that in so many other areas, particularly residency, which this committee and myself have gone round and round with that a couple of years now. When you're dealing with anyone's intent, it's pretty hard to prove that there's any kind of fraudulent intention involved in it, too. So if a person says that they intend to be a teacher and then changes their major, we'd be hard-pressed to try to recover funds on the basis of them falsifying an application. So I think, indeed, it could happen. Now, whether it would be widespread, I suspect it would not, but could it happen? Yes, it could. The benefit of this is 100% forgiveness, as Representative Wente correctly pointed out. Very few people will get that. Only one in five gets forgiveness now, and what we're talking about is even a smaller group, because we're talking about the individuals that know what they're going to do when they enter as a freshman. They know they're going to be a teacher. They succeed. They get through and get that degree, and they teach in rural Alaska. So very few people will get forgiveness under this program, in my opinion. The point is, it's an encouragement to try to get teachers to an area of the state where we have a need, and I think the bill does accomplish that purpose.
Mr. Chairman, do you expect we will have testimony from on behalf of the sponsors?
I'd raise that point. I just don't know why they would want to give a higher loan value for this program as opposed to our existing program. To the problem I addressed. Secondly, the other concern I have is I understand the intent is that you have somebody in a rural setting, say from the interior of Alaska, that it is expected that they would come back and stay in that community for a longer period of time. They would understand and be able to communicate with the younger kids that they're teaching. I think that's a proper tack. But the other situation is because of legal concerns now, because of the change we have to make, you can have somebody who gets his scholarship from Metlakatla, which is closer to Seattle than it's going to be to Fairbanks for somebody once, and then that student goes and teaches in the interior. There would be as much culture shock there. You know, you're talking a Canadian tribe versus what they would be imposing. You know, anybody that wants to go into teaching is going to have that, and you're not going to accomplish the intent of legislation where you would have on the original draft.
Representative Kastrum and Representative Ernst-Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Omsberg, if we're talking about the loan proceeds going more to tuition and this type of thing, and we've really got a student going to a pretty fine university, and I can't believe that he's really going to have the intent to defraud. I mean, the forgiveness provision only comes into place once he returns to the area, to the selected area for the prerequisite time, correct?
That's correct.
So I can't envision someone going to Stanford really with the intent of defrauding you out of the extra dollars. It seems like, as a practical matter, the only way that he's going to want to take advantage of this is to come back into the rural community and to teach. And so I feel there are adequate safeguards. I mean, you don't see intent to defraud as a serious problem.
As I said, I think there may be some individuals that will figure it out. And in dealing with the student loan program for 9 years now, there's going to be somebody that's going to find a way to try to beat this system. But do I think it's going to be a widespread intent? And do I think this bill is open to a lot of fraud? No, I don't. I just don't think it's going to happen, and for the reason you indicate. And while responding, I would like to add one other thing. The reason it's 10,000 instead of 6, now 10 is an arbitrary figure to be sure, in talking with the sponsors, that 10 is, it could be 15, sure. It could be 9, it could be anything. But the reason it's more is it's envisioned, we will be producing a certificate that will go to the school districts. And this is going to be an award, and this is going to be something very important that they're going to present at an award assembly in these schools. And they want it to be something special. It has a higher cap. It's not just the loan program. So they can borrow up to 10. And it's more a symbol than anything else to set it apart from the current program, to make it more of something special, a special award, instead of just saying, here's a student loan application and you can get a student loan, a regular loan. They want to make this special. It's for teachers. It's to encourage them into this. And so it has a higher loan limit. The effect of it isn't large. That's why the fiscal note's so small. But I think it's the symbol that's included that is important. And I believe, Representative Wente, that's why it has a higher loan limit.
What do you expect the number of people applying to this would be?
Well, we put in, I'm trying to remember the fiscal note, I have it there. I think I put in at 100, and I think that's a very liberal estimate on the program.
Another point, Mr. Chairman. I recall the average cost of education is going up considerably. Alaska perhaps has the smallest base of 3,500. That's Fairbanks. Anchorage is costing more than that now.
It's about 58.
58 at Anchorage?
That's right.
One of the things that you note that the bill does not restrict the student to go to school in the state of Alaska. Outside education can cost upwards of $10,000 to $14,000 on an annual basis. What this does is more adequately reflect the new cost of education, and that's why I would support the $10,000 figure. You wouldn't think less than that, you're fooling yourself.
Well, we clearly addressed that issue at length last year, and I think the result was education. They feel they can do it at 6,000. How many schools are over 6,000? How many, that they would apply to are available where they use more than 6,000?
The schools outside of Alaska, the majority of the public institutions are right at 6,000 or just under it. So we're talking about 6,000 to 6,500 would be the cost. Any private institution they attend will be substantially higher. For instance, and again, just for those three items, we're not talking travel or personal expenses. Any private institution they attend will cost anywhere up to, Stanford, for instance, the standard student budget there is $14,600 just for tuition, room and board, books, and supplies. So it really depends on where they go. And then if they go to the state of Colorado, which has an exorbitantly high out-of-state tuition, then they're going to have to pay. So again, that's why the fiscal note's so small. Most people won't borrow anywhere near 10. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if most people did, the commission would probably be in here opposing the bill, because we've been on record as saying the students are getting too far in debt, and we're going to have a tremendous problem with repayment. And if this opened it up for everybody to borrow $10,000, I suspect I'd be here testifying against it, but I just won't do that.
That's basically the issue we addressed last year.
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, to Dr. Holmesford. Are you going to use the same criteria in assessing cost factors as you do under the other program?
Yes.
So there's a control mechanism there. Although the student can get up to $10,000, the only difference is there's a higher limit. But the same control mechanism, there's so much allowed for certain line items are still in place. All this does is perhaps provide a mechanism to cover additional legitimate costs, where now they would have to cut it off. There may be a, but what do you have a limit on room and board or anything like that? Or you just simply cut it off at the 6,000?
Yeah, it's the cost of room, board, tuition, and fees, books, and supplies, or 6,000, whichever is small.
Whichever is small. And now you can cover more of those expenses under this particular program.
Correct.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. I'll entertain a motion, Representative Burns, to pass out.
Ready. Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass in committee. Committee substitute for House Bill number 504, loans dated 3984, with the accompanying fiscal note. Pass with unanimous consent.
All right. Is there objection? Version 2. Objection. Okay, now, tomorrow we're going to take up 650 and 609 at 5 o'clock. One is the appropriations bill, loan bill. The second one is the bond indebtedness bill. So we will adjourn the meeting and we can talk to you all about it.